Hello, everyone, and welcome to Free to a Good Home, the internet's only remaining funny podcast. My name is Michael Hagan. Joining me today as guest host, because Ben Jenkins is busy with something else, we have none other than the suck off, the self-suck king himself, Tom Walker. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Michael. You're an absolute little turd, and you seem committed to ruining my life while somehow bettering your own. It's so good to be here.
Joining us as a guest for the first time in, I'd say, months, maybe even a year. I don't know the last time he was on this podcast. He's here to promote his brand new series of NFTs. It is Guy Montgomery. Hello, Guy.
Hello, Michael, you champion. Why would you bring two people onto your podcast and then deliberately wrong foot both of them? To just sit up.
I'm going
to
go ahead and say, you know what, Guy?
Yeah.
You and I are the hosts. King, you are the guest, and the subject is not the many classifieds that can be oh so funny. That obviously you can get so much mileage out of. And of course, the made up Reddit posts that we all sit around and say, it's so funny the thing this creative writing student cooked up on their fucking off day. The subject is how much of a little cunt you are.
Me?
Yeah, what me do you and mean? Guy are just going to... Wax
do you
lyrical.
Ask the scorpion why it must sting? Do you ask the frog why it must hop? Or the eagle why it must soar? Tom, it is my nature.
Their lives are all too busy to appear on our shitty little podcast called Why Is Michael Hing a Little Cunt? The eagle is too busy soaring.
Hey, I'd really love to come on the podcast, but I'm very focused on my hopping right now.
I think that... Tom, you probably have a mountain of evidence to make this case. Guy, I think I've genuinely been nothing but lovely to you mostly. So, you know.
Do you know what? I don't disagree. And it is interesting to think that your definition of very lovely is sort of just mild ongoing antagonism.
Yeah, it's a level of niceness that's like, this guy must be my friend because he does treat me like shit a bit.
What?
And he'd know.
Well, what? Okay. Look, this is not where I wanted this show to go. But if we were to change some things about how I treated you both, what do you think you deserve, Tom? You can go first.
Easy with a bullet. Stop lying about this idea that you came up with that I took 2 days off of school to suck my own dick. Easy with a bullet. Absolutely stop. And ideally, you'd be banned. And I think if I took it to court, from my understanding of the way courts work in this country, I would be able to forbid you from even ever saying my name.
You want to call you Tom and not the self-suck king?
Ideally, I don't want him to call me at all, Guy.
Guy, do you have a law degree at all?
No, I don't. But I do remember in high school hearing about a guy in Sydney who took 2 days off school to suck himself.
You can't do this,
off.
Guy. You can't.
Guy. I wonder if you did take me to court, Tom, and try to sue me for telling everyone that you took 2 days off from high school to try and suck your own dick. Would that be defamation? Because first of all, defamation has to be untrue, I think. And what you've done is...
No, that is...
You did that.
And it will be exhibit Z3 in my... I think I have enough evidence to go through the alphabet at least 3 times over. And that's only the most recent of them. Yeah, it would absolutely be defamation.
Because you did do it.
Opportunity.
Yeah, but you took 2 days... You did do it, so that's
true. I didn't.
So that's...
I lack the work ethic to do that for anything.
If
I don't know.
If it's not true, Tom, if it's not true, then I think the issue you run into is that, yes, it does suggest you have work ethic and flexibility, which I think those are complementary things. So I don't think it's bad.
What was the work opportunity that was sacrificed, Tom? And
this was
the sensation
moment,
the of sucking
time,
yourself
and
off
this is,
worth it?
This is, first off, I didn't do it. Also, this is the umpteenth fucking time this audience has heard this.
Just tell me in a sentence.
I will. Hing said this in response to the boss of the bar that I'd applied to work at asking, hey, this guy's your friend, right? Anything I should know about him? And Hing said, oh, he's great. He's a hard worker. He did. And to be clear, this had never been discussed. No one had ever, this wasn't a rumor beforehand. Hing said, oh, he did tell me that he took 2 days off school to try and suck his own dick. And he wouldn't tell me if he got it. He'd only say, I was disappointed. And that just sprung from his fucking brain, and I didn't get the job, guy.
Okay. That is obviously deeply upsetting. You wanted the job, but it is also so brilliant and perfectly specific.
I know! It has staying power.
Yeah.
But now Tom Walker is Sydney's self-suck king. So, you know, I mean, that's a title you didn't also have before. You don't have any other title.
It's interesting to me, Tom, because you seem like such an open-minded. And I suppose with respect to what you put out in the world, not relaxed, because what your output is of a very high quality. But you don't seem like a man who's particularly interested in censoring yourself or sort of the descriptions of you from those around you. And yet this is a real sticking point.
That's right. Because while I would be honest about this, but I feel that the honesty about myself is such that if something isn't true, I have to defend it. I'm not a man with shame.
Yeah.
But to have this bandied around, because I do possess the analytical mind to think of sucking my own dick and then think, oh, what that will be is a penis that I'm well aware of all its bad qualities just flopping into my mouth. I don't think that would be enjoyable for me.
Well, traditionally, I think people try and suck themselves off when they're hard. So maybe that's part of why you felt disappointed after the 2 days.
That's honestly a great note. And I'll take that into my work going forward.
Let's try a classified show. Oh, this is a classified.
Michael, have you ever bought anything online?
Oh, you're going to do that for me? Can I show you a chair that I recently bought online? I bought a chair online.
Let's see.
And I ordered it. Guy, Tom and I went away with some people over New Year's.
Fun.
And we spent some time in a holiday
house. Did it go well?
It was owned by a futurist. And it and on New Year's Eve, while everyone was sort of getting ready to count down to the midnight or whatever, I got an alert on my phone saying I had an email saying that my cart at an online furniture store was still had not been processed. And that the sale was going to run out.
Oh, no.
At midnight, guys.
The worst
midnight.
Possible time for it to run out. You don't want to start that. You don't want to start the new year losing out on a sale. Or in your instance,
exactly. So I bought a chair on New Year's Eve, and now 3 weeks later or 4 weeks later, whatever, it has arrived.
If only there was a way to easily find out from the date.
It is much smaller than I anticipated. So I bought it thinking it was just a regular chair.
Uh-huh.
But this is the... Oh, God, how am I going to be able to show you this? I'll sit in it and then I'll show you with my laptop, I guess.
Why don't you lift up the chair?
Oh, hang on. Yeah,
lift it into screen and we'll...
So this chair cost me several hundred dollars. It is great. Blue. You can see
I just want to say now that I think anyone peddling a normal size chair wouldn't be sending out desperate reminders at midnight on New Year's Eve to be like, you're going to buy the chair, right?
Stuck in my office at 11:50 on December 31st, seeing that the numbers aren't adding up going into the new year.
Looking at the chair and looking at the designs for the chair where you got the scale just slightly wrong.
Somewhere there's a furniture salesman whose New Year resolution was to not get his ankles broken by the mob.
Okay, look, I'm gonna hold the chair. Just tell me your reaction.
Okay. Oh, it's fucking tiny. It's for a dog.
It's tiny and it's also heavy.
It's incredibly dense.
It's like
something that you would put a Persian cat on for a photo shoot.
You can't really tell,
Michael. This chair is for a different person living a totally different life, and they've got such a different bedroom from you.
It's for some sort of child, I think is basically what it is. My butt doesn't really fit into the scoop of it. So I'm sort of having to nestle in right now.
Wow. I just I cannot conceive of a world where you're pulling the trigger on this kind of thing. How well do they pay you at Triple J that you're just throwing money away at midnight?
Well, I was trying to, because we've just moved house, guy, and so I wanted to. Thank you. I was wanting to put a sitting chair in this podcast room.
Otherwise,
so that when
I
had
people
over the podcast with them, they could sit in a nice chair. But in actual fact, what will happen is they'll come over and they'll have to sit in this awful small chair and feel like it's a really power move.
It would be very generous for you to sit in the little chair and they could sit in a big chair. And
what if I bought a regular size chair and then whenever anyone came over, I sat in the regular size chair and then I made them sit in the small chair?
Here's the thing. Hing,
you go ahead, Tom.
I think you have accidentally bought a chair that is perfectly Ben Jenkins size. And I genuinely mean that. I think that he and his little Lord Fauntleroy body would slot into that thing perfectly.
He might actually love sitting in this chair. He might love to sit in this chair and eat some Spanish olives or something.
Yeah.
Eat some fig paste.
It would be satisfying to look at. And while we're here, I just want to circle back to what your suggestion was, Michael, which is a note on a way in which you could be kinder to those around you. Is you've accidentally bought the little chair. And immediately you're trying to use it to strengthen your own position and make the people who visit you, the people you love, feel small. I'm suggesting a world in which you sit on the little chair and you say, look, I accidentally bought the little chair. I sit in the little chair. And I bought the big chair for my guest.
Guy, you're sounding like someone has to spend some time in the little chair. Maybe that's what. If anyone's ever being a baby, I'll make them sit in the little chair. Guy, sit in the little chair.
We're going to talk about my fucking NFTs. What if we had a podcast?
Yeah. Tell us about your NFTs, Guy. You guys might not know this, but the worst idea of all time, Guy and Tim Batts, very funny podcast, releasing a series of ape-based NFTs.
Yeah. They're available through the medium of physical tickets to see my comedy festival show during the Melbourne and Sydney comedy festivals. If you visit guymontgomery.co.nz, we've got a whole range of different NFT ape/tickets available for you right there.
Yeah, guys selling some NFTs. They're not funny tickets. Yes!
I wish I'd thought to weaponize the acronym NFT as a put down, but alas.
I think introducing someone on a podcast that they're there to spook their NFT, really, it's another power play to really undermine.
Yes, everything you've done is a power play to solidify your own position. And also, you understand that Guy and I, as comedians, are so drawn to bullying that we won't be able to coalesce against you. So you've just, your entire life, and the reason you have a two-person podcast with one guest is so you can constantly pivot the laser of bullying to give the veneer of balance, but never have it turned on Michael himself.
Oh, no, there was some time there. We had a go at me for a while, you know? Remember the little chair that I bought? Everyone gets a turn in the baby chair. I do have a question that was sent in that was found. I don't know where this is from. I guess it's from some sort of Quora or something. This was sent in by Reverse Cheezel in the Discord. Thank you. Thank you, Reverse Cheezel. It's hard because it's hard to be enthusiastic about a wacky name, you know, unfortunately.
It's one of the things that Twitch gets you pretty good at because you eventually get oh, thank you so much, Sloppy Dong Melosodick, for the 3-month subscription.
Did you say Sloppy Dong Milosevic?
Sloppy Dong Milosodick. Yeah, they're a frequent watcher. But yours valued works member too. Of the Tom Unity.
this was in Quora, I think, in the pets and dogs section of Quora. And this person asks, is magic bad for dog? I'm working on sleight of hand magic tricks and practice in my house a lot, sometimes in front of dogs. Am I hurting their brains when I'm blowing their minds? Tom, I'll go to you first. You've owned several dogs throughout your life.
Yes.
Have you ever done magic tricks in front of them?
Oh, of course, the dogs, Michael. I don't know if this counts as magic, but the dogs have disappeared in mysterious circumstances.
Did you kill a dog, Tom?
After torturing them, yes. No, I reckon that the dog's not going to be, as long as you're doing it with some kind of treat or something, the dog's not going to be befuddled because it can still smell the treat. Also, dogs have such bad eyesight. You would have to be doing close-up magic in extreme close-up, surely.
I know. I'm imagining that these are human tricks performed, practiced on dogs. And my fear is that this is deeply confusing for the dogs. Dogs, like, I can't do magic because I have friends. But dogs are fooled. When you pretend to throw a ball...
Yeah,
a dog thinks you've thrown the ball, and that's like the most rudimentary, like entry-level version of a magic trick you could perform on anyone. And that
they train us mimes on dogs, so we learn confidence. Yeah,
yeah. So to sort of be doing it, is this your card, or disappearing anything? It would tear at their understanding of the fabric of society, and all of us, you know, like things that they took as a known, as reliable knowledge, is suddenly crumbling beneath them.
It seems like it would be both bad for the dog and bad for the magician, because the magician is going to turn up to his first gig and, like, you know, pretend to throw a card and be completely discombobulated when the entire party does not turn to look all at once.
The Magician's Alliance would say, you get out here with that sloppy dog magic. You go practice on some astute cats.
Yeah.
And then maybe
work your way up to toddlers, then back to the smarter cats.
Apes.
Yeah.
So, Guy, did you never went through a magic phase at all?
There was a one card trick I learned, which wasn't really magic. It was just trickery. And then I had when I was maybe eight, I got given one of those at a birthday party. I got given one of those little briefcases with 40 magic tricks or whatever. But it was too. I never committed the tricks to memory. I didn't learn them.
Right. What was the most embarrassing hobby that you did as a child/teenager?
I can't actually.
It's hard because our lives are kind of embarrassing now, so I don't think that they stand out in the same way for a normal person.
We know, for example, Guy Montgomery, that for a while you were trying to squeeze your penis and fart on cue. That was something you tried to do.
It's not something I tried to do, Michael. It was a fact of life.
It's like he's got this fucking blackmail dossier on everyone that he invites back into this podcast.
I wouldn't describe that as a hobby. That was just like something that was happening, you know, while I was doing my hobby of, I guess, playing with yo-yo. I just followed the normal trends. Yo-yos, chatterings, Tamagotchi. And I was good. I got good on the yo-yo and I was okay on the chatterings.
What's it? I don't think I know what a chattering is.
You might have had a different name for them in Australia, like a wobbly woo, but it was a circle. It was a large sort of metal circle, and then it would have five smaller metal circles on it, and you'd flick those with your thumb, and they'd start spinning around. It would create a chatter, and then you in turn would turn the larger circle of metal to keep the little one spinning.
Tom, do you know this? Honestly,
I feel vulnerable. I feel very vulnerable.
Guy, I think
like
you were given
my
a link
depression
of shame
era
to
grandmother
play with
trying
as
to
a
describe
boy.
this sounds like my depression era grandmother trying to describe the thing she found fun when she had no food. What was this?
Oh, in New Zealand, we'd all get to go on the plank. What are you talking about?
What's
you only
this
had
Soviet
simple
era
shapes
toy
to play
had,
with.
Guy.
Oh, you Australians probably had a different name for the five circle Monty.
Okay, so the new rule is, I guess I won't answer questions.
So I honestly can't even imagine what this thing. So how? Let's start with the size of it. What do we? What's how big is it?
And can I get a spelling? I would love to Google this.
It's chatter, like, you know, the chatter of people. C H A T T E R, and then rings. It's probably the circumference is roughly the size of a football, a soccer ball of the circle.
Uh-huh.
And then
that's the
smaller
big one?
Ones are like the size of bolts that fit just loosely around the bigger circle.
And so what is Toshioki Sasaki, recognized as the world's number one chatter ring player, visited New Zealand for a 12-day tour to support and promote the re-release of the rings. The Chattering has been played with by Mayor of Invercargill, Tim Shadbolt.
Yeah, he's still the mayor, and they're trying to get rid of him because he's too old.
These were something that was exclusive to New Zealand. They are a New Zealand toy. That is how they are defined on Wikipedia. The toy is used by swiping the beads to get them spinning while keeping the ring turning. Around 50,000 rings were purchased in New Zealand at department stores, street markets, and dairies in 1996. You were selling the rings at... popping down for a liter of milk and a few chatter rings.
Everyone did this. Everyone in the world was doing this.
Oh, no, that can't possibly be true, guy.
World Chattering Champion visiting New Zealand? How are they the world champion and they're only visiting one country? And there's only one country that does it.
It's so embarrassing for it to be invented in New Zealand, popular in New Zealand, and then have the champion to visit you from Japan. The country that the only country that has chattering players couldn't even have the best one.
Oh my god. This is like an out of body. So, you know, I didn't think it would happen to me. This is meant to happen to other people.
is this a thing that like so you've never seen like an Australian comedian or someone come to New Zealand and make fun of your ludicrous toy before?
It's not just country specific, but to my knowledge, it's era specific. So, you know, for a comedian to be armed with this information, this is like how you stumble into it. But for a comedian to know that, to come and like attack that, it's just so, so specific.
So what year do you think this bullshit toy was being played with by New Zealand's children?
I'm guessing
children?
I'm in year between like year 4 and year 6. So that would be
that's what, 80s, 70s?
No, yeah, I'm thinking actually roughly like 96, 97, maybe 98 is it's
They were apparently very popular in the 1990s, but they did have a revival in 2011 when Apple Activities Educational Toys hosted the Hawke's Bay Chattering Reunion in Hastings.
Wow.
Here are the prizes, the prize categories that were awarded at the Hawke's Bay Chattering Reunion.
Can I just, this is all a problem because Michael asked our most embarrassing hobby, and I sort of tried to throw, I didn't really do embarrassing ones. I just did the normal ones.
Oh, of course I played with the ring that all my children...
A throwaway. This was the meat inside of a yo-yo Tamagotchi sandwich. You know, the three big ones that everyone in the world had.
Anyway, the winners were... The categories included best performance, oldest verifiable ring,
cool.
youngest player, and oldest player... Okay. Getting the prize for oldest jittering player must be that's a hard trophy to hold.
Wow.
We'll move on from chatter rings in a second, but I don't think I actually understand how you play with a chattering.
I have a clip here from a TV program from 2011 if you would like.
Sure, okay. Well, yeah, let's.
But also I would love to hear how Guy specifically played with them.
Basically, you're holding the big ring in your left hand. I was right-handed, so I'm holding the big...
Oh my god, already I'm having fun.
The bigger ring in the left hand, and then with your thumb, you flick. There's like 5 bolts that you flick those, and then they start rotating, and they're going anti-clockwise, and they're all sort of banging into each other, and that might encourage or discourage the other bolts from continuing to spin. And then you put both hands back, so you bring your right hand back to where the left hand is above it, and then you turn the bigger circle to keep those.
Can I be honest? This sounds like the kind of thing that a priest in the 1950s invented to stop people masturbating. That's what this chattering sounds like.
This sounds like a stronger economy than New Zealand. For example, Japan had a surfeit of very specific metal rings. And bolts, and after a contract fell through. I'm looking at a...
I'm watching a video of it now, and basically it's kind of like people are spinning it while they're doing sort of upper body dancing, I guess, is the kind of... You're doing tricks, sort of like tossing it in the air, and winding it up and down your arms and around your head a little bit.
But that's hard to do. I mean, basically, the fundamentals of what I was describing. These, you're watching pros.
So for a New Zealand child, basically what they'd do is they'd spin this ring around on their hand a little bit, and that was enough for you in 1998.
The fad didn't last. You know, it wasn't a super long lasting fad. You figured out how to do it. You did it for a while, and then you stopped.
Oh, you'd move on to other things. Perhaps a square would come to town and you would hold that for a while.
That's right.
Now, Tom, when you were growing up, you had an Xbox, I think.
Yes. And I could play on that in a myriad of ways. So I'd pick that up and it had these beads attached around it. And so you'd spin the Xbox as hard as you could, throwing it from hand to hand.
Yeah.
I'm also looking at the... I'm looking at the comments on this, on the video, and there's someone who says, I attempted chattering, but I never caught past the generic spin of the chattering because they made your hands smell metallic.
So we can also assume that these chatterings had some sort of oxidization process happening.
I'm guessing that person would buy theirs from the dairy. Like if you got the high spec one from Toy World, your hands didn't smell metallic.
Did you ever have Yoho Diablos where you were, guy?
The name's familiar, but I can't visualize it.
So this was like a kind of a pointless toy from like the 90s and the 2000s in Australia. It was sort of two drumsticks that had maybe 2 meters of quite fine string between them.
Yeah, got it.
And then you would also have, a pendulous two-wheel.
We had that too. Alongside Devil
And you'd sort of whip the drumsticks in order to like spin the Diablo.
There's always a busker doing it. And you think, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were banned at my primary school because very quickly on, people stopped using them for their intended purpose and just used to hold both drumsticks and just whip each other in the back with them. And then the teachers were like, you can't bring a whip to school and just whip people.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, when you put it like that, the chatterings, it sounds like a sweet and simple time.
Very safe. Yeah, no one gets hurt, the chatterings. Did you have any embarrassing hobbies as a teenager, Tom, or as a child? I mean, I know you were into like Warhammer and stuff, but like...
Yeah, I think I've talked about on the podcast, one of the bleakest moments of my life was when my mum was helping me clean my place and she was like, this is in my early 20s, and she was like, you just have no tools to deal with the chaos you create just by living, was her exact quote. And I looked around and saw her tearing up, and I wanted to go to her and comfort her, but I was holding a box of half-painted Warhammer miniatures, and I didn't know how to put them down without her drawing focus to the Ogre Kingdom's army that I hadn't been able to follow through on. And I just thought that had the perfect...
How old were you at this time, Tom? How old were you?
I think I was like 22.
Oh, wow.
Probably like 24.
But you did magic, didn't you? Did you have a magic phase?
No, I played a little bit of Magic the Gathering, but of course that's like even worse at making friends.
Yeah.
Whipping out like a
You never had like a top hat and a trick sleeve with handkerchiefs in it?
No, did you?
No, but I know Ben went through a magic phase and I assumed it was like a Shaw Boy thing. I don't know.
No, we did learn juggling though. But no, I never learned like anything. I've remained very anti-learning my entire life.
Yeah, to your credit. That is honestly quote that you have obviously had some sort of impact on you from your mum is just one of the most devastating things I've heard.
And you know what's worse, Guy? She wasn't wrong. and I haven't fixed it. I've got a fucking ADHD diagnosis. I'm trying to go to, I have to go to a psych to get this fucking inattentive, whatever the fuck it is. I can't even remember that.
It's a great pull quote,
Tom. you just lost focus saying the word inattentive.
But here's the thing, you were describing
a condition that you have,
yeah,
and you've got to the word inattentive and then stopped.
But I went to the doctor to get this, and then I was like, okay, that's great. I've taken a step. You know, it, also, this was like 4 months after my therapist told me you need to go to your GP and do this. So again, diagnostic. But I then got a call from the place the day after, and they were like, hey, you walked out without paying.
You did a runner from the doctor.
Yeah.
So are you embarrassed to go back now because they'll I'm shaking down for the money or what?
Well, I'm more than happy to hand the money over, but it was just a very brutal thing. Anyway,
did you pay them in the end?
Huh?
Did you pay them in the end?
I'm going to pay them on Monday because I have to go back with a urine test because I also wanted to get just a general diagnostic health thing.
Mm.
Got one thing done. I need to lose 12 kilos.
Wow.
Hang on. Sorry. Can I ask, do you have to deliver your urine pack or you've got to do the test?
They gave me a jar to take away, fill with wonderful piss.
Have you done that yet?
No.
Do they not trust you to accurately and concentratedly take a piss into the little sampler in one of their bathrooms provided at the clinic?
No, I don't know. This probably is the language you should use with a doctor, but the doctor was like, all right, well, here, we can give you a urine test. And I was like, oh, sorry, man, I'm empty. And so he gave it to me to take home.
I've just got to say that I'm thoroughly enjoying this, but a lot of this feels like, you know, I think we're entering a level of personal discourse and conversation that sort of betrays just how important little Ben Jenkins is to the podcast.
Yeah.
Hang on. So wait, just to really round out Tom's medical history.
Yeah, Ben would have probably thrown them a jar of your piss at some point.
You've got to give them a jar of your piss, Tom.
Yeah.
You've got to lose 12 kilos, yeah, and then you've got to get medication because you're inattentive and shit or whatever.
Yes. And also, I don't know if it's exactly 12 kilos because BMI is bullshit, but basically my BMI is off. But also BMI is bullshit and doesn't factor in a whole bunch of stuff.
Mm. Okay. Can
we just turn...
Also, the nurse called me old.
Oh, that's...
What? Why did the nurse call you old?
Because I'm 32. And she was like, oh, you're like in your 50s.
What?
She said, oh, like you're like in your 50s. You're like really old. Hey, guess when I was born?
When were they born?
Like, I guess 2006. And they were like, no, I'd be like 15. I'd be like, no, what? You'd be like 18. And I was like, uh-oh.
I don't think I understand this bit, Tom. Is this a real thing
this
that happened?
This is a real thing that happened. The nurse said to me, oh, you're like really old. I thought you were like, you know, young, but with the mask on. But I've realized you're really old. Guess when I was born? And she was like, I was born in 2001. And I was like, okay.
Well, that
anyway, what are you going to do with the blood you took out of me?
That sounds so
that
rude.
Nurse is no spring chicken.
So
21's old to a teenager. Fucking nurse. Michael, I just have
taking the blood and throwing it in her face like she's wronged me at a cocktail party.
I have to ask you, Michael, did you have any embarrassing hobbies yourself?
I wrote I obviously wrote fan fiction because you can tell that by looking at me.
Now what franchises are we talking before you just move along from fanfic?
It is embarrassing that I engage with it at all, but the actual content would be
actually,
it wasn't that
really
bad.
Well,
like, in retrospect, it could have been a lot worse. Like, it wasn't erotic, which I'm thankful that it wasn't erotic. But I wrote like Harry. It was like kind of like bad comedic fanfic. Like, it was like, I think I wrote one, a Harry Potter one, where about Cho Chang, and her being like the only Chinese person in the, you know, it's that kind of, it was, even back then, I think we could tell that I was, there was a sort of a comedic spark with it.
Hey, if it's so good, you should read some of it now, man.
I've tried to find, honestly, if I could find it, I would have used it as a radio bit now, because I think it would have been really good. Like, not actually good, but it would have been, like, good to make fun of.
Yeah.
I did make a lot of websites. Again, it's just like,
Google, Amazon.
No, I made a, I don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast before. I, when I was in like year seven, I went to the, we were using the computer labs and we got taught how to use Photoshop. And I like thought, I kind of had quite a bit of fun doing that. And so I went home and downloaded a thing called GIMP, which was like the free Photoshop. And then I got a bunch of photos out of the school website or school magazine website thing of our headmaster and just Photoshopped his head, because I didn't quite like him. I Photoshopped his head onto a series of, I guess, historical villains, many of whom were Nazis.
Yep.
And then just sort of like printed them out and put them around the school and... sent them around to, I don't know. I just was implying that he was a Nazi, I guess.
It sure sounds like it, Michael.
And as a, in retrospect, there was a lot of anti-Semitism at the school, but because it was kind of a shitty private school with a lot of like racism and stuff there anyway. But I don't think that this man was necessarily an anti-Semite. But, you know, that didn't stop me accusing him of being a Nazi.
And did it, was it, this was circulated and they sought the perpetrator at the school?
Yes, they did. And it took them about 2 years to catch me.
You see, it couldn't have been me.
In year
I was
nine.
Taking 3 days off to try and suck my own cock.
In year nine, it caught up with me because the website I'd made had sort of branched out into things that weren't just like photoshops of the headmaster, you know, as Saddam Hussein or whatever, and Adolf Hitler. But it was also just like quite detailed, I guess quite disturbed descriptions of the sex lives of the teachers and the various like fucked things that I thought they would do. Like, it was really crook. Just me accusing them of doing all kinds of deviant behavior.
Wow.
It was...
Hing, did you have any, like, hobbies growing up? Oh, yeah, I wrote screeds. I really loved writing screeds.
Yeah. Honestly, there's a lot of manifesto-type things that were written on this website about how I would make the world a better place and stuff. But a lot of it really was about, like, accusing the teachers of being, like, into like furry stuff
if
or
we
whatever,
could only
or like
that keyboard out of your hands and put a metal ring with five other metal rings on it.
Something the happy byproduct of industrial evolution.
So I've done this in storytelling nights and stuff before, but I got involved with a pretty bad crew of people when I was in high school, separate to this, right? And they were into like quite serious drugs and stuff. And there was like a disciplinary scandal that broke out at the school where in the boarding house, kids were really misbehaving and a lot of bad stuff was going on. And after that broke in the papers, the school did this like huge locker search of the entire, of the first, I think it was like everyone from year 7 to year 10, I think they searched everyone's lockers. And I thought they'd found some drugs in my locker, but we weren't allowed to touch our lockers or anything. I got called to the second master's office and I thought, I was like, oh fuck, I'm going to like, I don't know, get like, you know, in trouble for drugs or whatever. But in actual fact, they were just wanted to ask me about my blog. And I was like, well, this is much less serious.
Wow. I admire the depth of honesty with which you shared then, Michael. This is, again, that this podcast is well off the rails of poking light fun at advertorials, but I really feel like we are getting somewhere pretty interesting.
Gosh, yeah. This is why I'm much better at asking questions than I'm at answering them. I think often...
You went so deep.
Ben Penkin sticks that in the edit, I think.
Oh, I wrote fanfic because I was quite a disturbed teen and my writing, it knew no bounds. Oh, I sought to topple and remake the world in my own image.
Holy heck.
Do you have a classified for us, Michael?
I do. This one is potentially fake.
So
I don't know.
Fucked. Just clunking the gears.
So this has been, this is just a modern manners sort of question. This is an Am I the Arsehole taken from Reddit. Mm-hmm. AITA for eating my fast food in the car so my girlfriend cannot get the first bite. I think this is something we've all experienced and to an extent. I've been living with my girlfriend for the past 6 months. We're both in our early 20s and have an overall great relationship. From well before our relationship began, I've been a big fast food eater. There's an intersection in my city that hosts 7 different fast food restaurants, and I'll frequent basically all of them. Since I do shift work, I'm generally off the clock around 11 a.m, and then, being too tired to cook, I'll hit up a burger joint for a cheeseburger and some fries. My girlfriend always wants to have exactly one bite, exclusively the first bite of every item I order. When I notice this, I would start by contacting her on my way home to the restaurant, on my way to the restaurant to ask if she wanted something. Her answer was consistently no, but when I got home and the crinkly in the fast food bag is like Pavlov's bell to her. She immediately beelined straight for whatever I'm eating and asked if she can have a bite. I've asked if I could leave just a little at the end. No, she wants the first bite. I've pleaded with her to just let me buy her food. No, she doesn't want to eat that much. This goes on for a little bit. I don't like it. I don't like this bizarre culinary version of jus prime noctis. I don't know what that means.
That's the that was fresh in my mind as prima noctis is a archaic law of the lord of the land may take the first night of the marriage bed of any freshly married couple.
Oh my goodness, that's such a full on thing to compare eating the first bite of a burger to. That's crazy.
Yes.
Yuck. Anyway, so this person is now, I've been eating in my car and discreetly disposing of the wrappers. I was just telling her I wasn't hungry after work, but the other day she found a garbage bag full of fast food wrappers in our bin on garbage day, and she's furious at me for lying to her. Am I the asshole for not sharing with her? Guy, how do you feel about this? Do you ever have to secret food away
no,
from your partner?
But I have an inverse policy, which is... I think that if we go out for a meal or if we get takeaways and bring them home, I'm happy to volunteer, you know, multiple mouthfuls of the first 80% of my meal. But I'm always eating with an end game and a strategy in mind. And when we get down to 20% and below, that food is my property. And it doesn't matter who you are, how close I am to you. If you betray me, you know, I will be upset. And we will then both be upset with each other because of how seriously I take this. So, I mean, to me, one bite at the start, I understand some people are precious about the first bite, but that's okay. I have no issue with the partner wanting the first bite of whatever burger.
But what is it about you that draws you towards the final bites of a meal? What do you think? Like, what is the
when you if it's a meal out, say, or if it's a meal with a few different components, I get in my mind how I want the flavors or like the note on which I want the meal to end. I know exactly, you know, how I'm planning to dismount this thing, and other people, if they don't know this working theory, then they're just reckless. They'll just, you know, they'll swoop in from the side with a fork and just create anarchy. Because how could anyone know? If you haven't told them, how could they know that you're building something beautiful?
And you don't want to be the person narrating the process of the construction. You want to be involved in a freewheeling discourse. You can't be saying that this exactly. meatball is the lodestone of the entire end, like crescendo sonata of
you
the meal.
You look like a maniac. I mean, is this resonate with either of you at all, what I'm doing?
Yes, but... I will say, I think I'm in a different boat where Demi is so very small that she's yet to eat a meal that she can consume all in one go.
But do you then assume that you are welcome to as much of the meal as she eats it? Or do you just sit back with discipline and patience and think, there's no way she's getting through this. My time will come.
It's exactly. It's happened every single time for so long that I now understand that I don't need to jump in. And also the times that I have been like, well, she's going to stop eating soon, and just jumped in before the checkered flag, you know, the red flag is raised, I have been justly chastised. Yeah. Okay. And I think to spite me, sometimes she has finished the entire meal and then we've walked home with her with a big tummy ache.
I know this is a character flaw of mine. I hate sharing food.
Oh, wow.
I despise it. I love... I just get your own. And, you know, I would much prefer you just to get your own version of that. I don't mind us buying six meals we have to and then take them all home. I would much rather that. But it's like I've ordered my thing and I want my thing. And I don't want to share my thing because you've ordered something
crazy.
Must be
incredibly
and I don't want your crazy
experience
thing.
For you.
Yeah, well, yes, I need to say again, I recognize this as a personality flaw. I recognize I need to work on this.
Do you approach this as like, if you are at a thing where sharing is the way of things, like in dumplings, for example, you don't...
I'll get my own.
Am I right to think that you would be like, okay, so do you order a plate of dumplings just for you? Or are you like, if we order a plate of dumplings, I will be having the six of these 12 that are my right?
So like, you know how... Okay, just to give you some, I guess, a broader context of how strong this impulse is in me. To have my own, I would say my on again off again flirtations with the veganism over the past 8 years have been 80% I don't want to share my food and 20% like environmentalism. It's I would say the vast majority of my restrictive diet that I've had since 2014 has basically been I want to have a special one that no one else wants.
Incredibly convincing an earthen cloak for selfishness.
Yes, it is. Isn't it just because no one wants your vegan food because they're like, oh, yuck, veganism, yuck, yeah. Right? And then, and you also get to be like, oh, yeah, it's for the planet or whatever. But in reality, it's just like, if I have my own one that doesn't have any dairy or whatever, no one else will want it. And then I don't have to ever have this discussion about how I don't want to share.
So I'm sorry. So
bad?
No, you're right. I've been heavily intruded upon by a cat who's like sort of, was funneling into my groin towards the end of your memory. I think it sounds, Michael, like you're an ass, but at least you're a self-aware ass. Just share the food.
You're taking steps so this doesn't impact on others, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, you know. Like last night I went out to dinner. We had like a little outdoor Thai thing with myself and Harm and two other friends, and they all got sharing food. And I was like, I'll get my own one so I could have special
vegan
food.
Did everyone know going in? So what do all of these people who you just had dinner with last night believe was the reason for you going separate? Because you're a vegan.
Hum and I kind of have a thing where she will just, well, I'll say, oh, I'll get my own one. And then she'll be like, ah, it's because of his veganism or whatever.
I see.
It's sort of she's complicit in the lie.
Performance you put on. Yeah. So that everyone thinks you're normal.
Yeah, the little routine that we have.
So, yeah, as far as we know, what you're doing is just getting your own food, and we don't take any of it because it would be rude because you only have one dish, so that's your dish.
Yes.
But in fact, it's because
but
if anyone touches your food, you will lash out. Like,
I'll go fucking gorilla mode on these
people.
There is
a decent level of self-sacrifice in that if you are eating the vegan option from any restaurant, basically, you will be having a worse dinner than the three co-diners.
All right, we've got to wrap this up soon because Tom's going to go.
Shared for an hour.
It's so good. Just finding out stuff like reverse engineering how Hing thinks sometimes makes me feel like I'm looking at like the programming for a Furby. Like I'm finding out why he has been vegan, and you know, and it's making so many things about the dinners we've had in the past make sense.
Well, you can't touch mine, Tom. You can't have any of mine. Tom, you are doing a comedy festival tour, I believe.
I am indeed.
True? And it's all about javelins?
It's mostly about javelins.
do you want to tell people when it's on or what it's called or anything,
Tom?
Yeah,
it's called Javelin.
Is it really?
How do you come up with your names?
It's... bad what I'm doing. Anyway,
what do you mean it's bad?
It's over at Melbourne Comedy Festival and Brisbane Comedy Festival, but probably do something for Sydney as well. But yeah, it's, and check out the Twitch channel. It's twitch.tv/TomWalker. I've been playing some very complex and very simple and dumb games over there, and it's been a blast.
Are you doing any other cities aside from Melbourne? Are you doing Sydney? Are you doing Adelaide? Are you doing Brisbane?
I'm doing Brisbane. I'm doing the offer that I got from Adelaide was so bad, so I did not do that.
Okay,
but okay. So I'm doing Melbourne, and I'll do something in Sydney probably, and Brisbane.
All right, and Guy Montgomery, you don't have to plug your podcast because Tim Batt was on here last week, and he's done all that. I mean, feel free to obviously. No. But you've got a live tour coming up as well.
I'm honestly, how excited I am to be in Australia is disproportionate to how exciting it is to be in Australia. I cannot wait. I'm coming to do the Melbourne Comedy Festival it runs through April, and then I'm doing Sydney in May. And tickets are on sale for both. It's called Guy Montgomery by Name, Guy Montgomery by Nature. And I did have heaps of Javelin material, but now that I haven't pointedly been promoting it on there, I feel like I have to strike it for fear of looking like I'm aping Tom Walker. So there's about a 45-minute hole in the show where you can imagine some was all premium Javelin material would have been. But I suppose I might pivot and concentrate on hammer throw, discus, you know, one of the other throwing ones.
Chatterings, potentially, trying to make them an Olympic sport eventually.
I wouldn't be surprised if I spoke about chatterings at the next stand-up show in New Zealand, because I don't think any of us knew that we were the only ones doing that.
It'll be so cool to, when you take that show to to Sydney and then have to rejig it so it's 50 minutes of explaining what a chattering is. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen the people who come from international to do a festival and then do one show and are like, nobody here knows.
Yeah.
Nobody here knows what Dowling Street is or whatever.
And guys, this is a show you did it, if you've done previously in New Zealand and stuff? Is it sort of like new material about your slow decay into madness type thing?
It's both. It's sort of, I haven't been to Australia for 2 years, so there's some great jokes that I've come up with that I'll be doing in the show. And then there'll also be, it'll be about half old gold, half new material. It's basically, I'm just going to be funny for an hour, all going well. Some nights
He's so good at that. The guy's one of the best stand-up comics out. You got to go see him.
Too kind.
Yeah, and Tom Walker, one of Australia's premier javelin comedians, also on sale in Melbourne. Thank you so much both for being here. Guy, I'm sorry we didn't get to talk about your NFT project, but I'm sure another opportunity will arise.
I'm doing Fallon
next
week.
And if anyone wants to check out Tom Walker's Guide on How to Suck Your Own Dick, you can find it on his YouTube channel.
Piece of shit.
Tom Walker is good. Good. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain, if you're not into yoga, if you have half a brain, if you like making love at midnight in the dunes of a cave, then I'm the love that you've looked for. Write to me.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.